song is by Shinemi from Brazil. I'm a hip hop machine. And let me remind you that he's recording this speech.
So I'm going to talk to you about Buffon machines, and specifically one particular aspect of the Buffon machine paper, which is the von Neumann-Flageolet scheme, and how to use it to obtain a fast Poisson law simulator. And this is joint work with Michel Soria. So just to give you a little bit of context, Buffon machines were invented in the concept of combinatorial random generation. In combinatorial algorithms, whether it's the recursive method or the Boltzmann method, which are two different methods to generate combinatorial objects with the symbolic method, there comes a point in the algorithms where you need to simulate probability distributions. And a question that comes as soon as you try to implement these algorithms efficiently is how do you simulate these laws efficiently and simply? And so the problematic of Buffon machines is how do you simulate these probability distributions, in particular using as a source of randomness, random bits. And so in this talk we'll concentrate on the Poisson distribution. So to understand why this is different than a lot of other works that have been done before, I must talk about the unit of randomness that one can consider for these algorithms. You have on one part the Bernoulli law, which is a discrete law that you know how, which I call coin flip or random bit or Bernoulli law of parameter p, which designates a random process which is equal to 1 with probability p, and with equal to 0 with probability 1p. And on the other side, there's a uniform law, which is a continuous law noted U of O1, a random process which produces a real in the unit interval uniformly. And what is interesting is that you can see this uniform law either as a real or as an infinite sequence of random bits. And you can go from one to the other using the dyadic development or this very simple algorithm that you all know. And so basically, a lot of things in random generation of variates considers that the unit of randomness is the uniform variable. But this is a theoretical consideration because in practice, computers of course do not manipulate continuous objects. And so you can be in one of two cases. Either the precision of your uniform variable is too high, in which case you waste a lot of randomness that you could be saving, or it's not high enough, in which case you introduce bias in your random generation. And so the aim of Buffon machine algorithms is to devise algorithms which only use random bits, which is the smallest unit that you can get of randomness in a computer, or a pseudo-random bit. And so the paper dates back to 2009 by Philippe Maris and Michel. Okay, so in this, the particular aspect I'm going to talk about started with von Neumann, who in 1951 gave a very elegant algorithm to generate an exponential variable. So the algorithm is here. You first have a counter D, which you initiate to zero. And then you generate a sequence of uniform variables. And, I don't have any pointer anymore. And as long as these uniform variables that you generate are decreasing, you continue, as soon as the one is increasing, then you stop. If the sequence you have generated this way is of size n that is even, you increment d plus 1 and you start over. And if it is odd, then you return d, which is the integer part of your exponential variable, plus y0, the first uniform variable that you generated, which is the fractional part. And it is not too hard to see that the sequence, the probability of the event of having a descending sequence has this probability here. And when you sum it, you get exponential of minus x, and you get a variate that has exponential probabilities. So And the Buffon paper, Philippe and his co-authors generalized this idea, which has already been generalized many different times, but has generalized it in a way that it makes it very amenable to random bits. And the new scheme, which I call the von Neumann-Flageolet scheme, uses permutations to simulate discrete laws. So how does this work? You have some class of permutation, which I name P, with a generating function P of x. And P sub n is the subset of permutations of size n, and Pn is the number of permutations of size n. So you just have a loop, and the first instruction in this loop is you draw a geometric of x, where x is a parameter that you give the algorithm. Then you draw a random permutation of size n, and if this random permutation belongs to the class that you have decided to have, then you return n, and if not, you start over. So the probability of returning n is written here, and the interest of basing your random generation on random permutations is because they're very simple to randomly generate, for one, and for two is because you know a lot of different classes of permutations, and you can constrain a lot of classes to have an enumeration that you're interested in. And finally, a property of this algorithm is that it has a geometric number of iterations. So you may want to ask, what kind of laws can I generate with the standard classes that I know? Well, in the paper, these are the examples that they give. If you have the class of all permutations, then the enumeration is n factorial, the EGF is 1 over 1 minus x, and this gives a geometric law. If now you have sorted permutations, that means that you have only one precise class, then the EGF is x of x, and the probability distribution is a Poisson variable. And finally, if you have cyclic permutations with only one cycle, then you have n minus 1 factorial permutations. The EGF is this, and this creates the distribution that you call log series. And you can also obtain other sort of families of classic permutations with probability distributions that aren't standard. So we're going to be interested in how to optimize the case of the sorted permutations. But first of all, I'm going to tell you what is the cost of this for any general class that you might have. So how this hinges on how you generate the random permutations. So of course you could use the very standard Fisher-Gates random shuffle algorithm, which with a good random generator behind, you can generate permutations in n log n plus little o of 1 of bits. But you have no control if you want to do early rejection. And so then there's another way, much simpler, much more which you have much more control over, and for this you draw n uniform random variables as a sequence of random bits. So this is the first line of the algorithm. You put each one of these random variables in a try, and then you look at the order of the leaves, which I call order type of the try, and you look at what order the uniform variables are, and that will give you a random permutation. And so you know that to unfold this whole try until it separates all the uniform variables, you'll need on average n log n plus big O of n bits. That's the average path length. Except this would be the cost if you really wanted to have the entire permutation. But what is interesting is, since you only want to check if a permutation is sorted or is cyclical, then you can stop generating the permutation as soon as you realize that it's not going to be of the class that you're aiming for. And so basically, this gives you this to think about, is that, as before, since we only want to check the membership, you don't need to draw all the bits. And furthermore, since all the bits are independent and identically distributed, you can draw them in whatever order you want. And that is important because we're going to be able to shuffle things around and get them in an order that we are interested in. So I'm going to give you a specific example of what kind of orderings you could take to draw less random bits, because once again, the goal is to draw as few random bits as possible. So for instance, here you have five uniform variables as a sequence of infinite bits, and you have the triad that separates them all. So you can't really see the colors, but you can't see the colors, but you can see that basically you don't need to look at all the bits of the uniform variables to be able to separate them in the triad. But if you only look at vertical slices, that means that you look at the uniform variables one after the other instead of trying to separate them all, then you're going to be, this is what it's going to do. So, first example with vertical slices, you first look at the first bit of U1, and you compare it with the first bit of U2, and that's the same. So you go on and you look at the first bit of U0, of U, second bit of U1, and the second bit of U2, and they're the same, and so on, until you find out that U2 is indeed greater than U1. So you now compare U2 and U3. You already have the first bit of U1, of U2, and you look at the first bit of U3, and they're already greater. So now you're going to compare U3 and U4. 1 and 1, perfect. Now the second bit, 1 and 0. Aha! Here you realize that U4 is smaller than U1 and then U3, and since you want to accept only sorted permutations, you can immediately reject this course of action. Now if you look at horizontal slices, you're going to be looking at the first bit of every uniform variable, one after the other. So I'm going to go at it fast. It would do zeros, then ones, zeros, and then once again, here you have this inversion, and you can stop very early on. So as you can see, with respect to how many bits you would need to spread out the entire try, by slicing them in this way, you have a certain gain of bits that you calculate. So now I'm going to, as promised, look at how to do an efficient Poisson law. So the Poisson distribution is what you have up there, we all know it. And this can be generated with the VNF scheme with sorted permutations. To give us an idea of what is optimal here, Knuth and Yahoo have a result in 1983 that links the entropy or average number of bits, optimal average number of bits of simulating a distribution to the base decomposition in base 2. And so I don't know why there isn't any numbers on the axis, but here it was showed that for one lambda, the optimal is around 3 or 4 bits. So that's what we know that we can go below, and we'll see if we can get close to that. So sorted permutations, as you've seen from my previous example, I'm going to look at the horizontal slices, and I'm going to make sure that at every slice, I'm going to have a pattern that is only zeros, so elements that are going to go on the left side of the try, and then only ones, the elements that are going to go on the right side of the try. And then I'm going to take the elements that went on the left and recursively decompose, etc., etc. So the algorithm is basically, I flip a coin, and until it is, while it is equal to zero, I increment k, and then I flip a coin, and I want it to be one every time, and at the end, I want to make sure that the sum of zeros and the sum of one is equal to the entire length of the run, which is why k is superior or equal to n, and if that is the case, then I do the recursive call with this on the left side with k, and on the right side with n minus k. So by observing the rejected patterns, it's easy to establish a recurrence of average cost, which is this. And in particular, you have a toll that tends to 4, and interestingly, of course, since the probability of doing the recursive call is 1 over 2 power to the n, then the toll is what dominates the average cost of the algorithm, which tends to 4. And so the intuition of why the cost, this average cost, tends to 4 is that basically what you're doing here is that you're drawing two geometrics. First, you're drawing one geometric for the run of zeros, and then you're drawing a second one for the length of ones. And if the sum of these two geometric is equal to n, then you do the recursive cost. And so back to the VNF scheme, once you have this very efficient algorithm to draw, to test random permutations that are sorted, then you can plug it back in the VNF scheme, and you have this algorithm. So the only thing I changed here is that I considered that drawing a random permutation of size n and checking whether it is sorted is basically drawing a random variable, a Bernoulli variable of parameter 1 over factorial n. So this is the algorithm that you have, and we know that it does 1 over lambda of e lambda iteration, and each iteration costs the cost of the geometric variable, which is 1 over lambda, plus the cost of the Bernoulli 1 over factorial n, which is 4 as we've just seen. And so the total cost is this, and it has this, again I don't know why you don't have the numbers on the axis, it has this shape of distribution. So what you can note is that when lambda is larger than 1/2, it goes to infinity. Why? Because the geometric, when lambda is very small, the geometric tends to be very large, in which case, for instance, if the geometric starts being 20 or even larger, you never have Bernoulli of 1 factorial 20 that is equal to 1, so you just keep looping until eventually maybe you have an n that is small enough that you might be accepted. And so this, interestingly, this is something that you can get around with, because there's another algorithm to simulate this Poisson-Lamb by Maris and Michel that uses the same expression as von Neumann in the beginning of my talk, except that they're going to be bounded by delta. And so basically, instead of drawing sorted runs of uniform variables, you're going to draw increasing runs, but which are bounded by lambda, and you're only accept when the last one jumps behind lambda. And so you can see that if lambda is very small, then the probability that your first variable is going to be larger than lambda is going to be very good, and so you're going to accept it right away. And so what is interesting is in this algorithm, it's the exact opposite of the previous one, which is it is very efficient when lambda is small, and when lambda is big, it completely degrades. And so so this is work in progress, and I guess the next step is to integrate both algorithms and understand why this one is more efficient and how to maybe generalize it to the VNF scheme. Thank you very much.
So you're also interested in the large lambdas, I guess?
Yes.
How far are you from the Camusian lower bound? In number of bits?
In number of bits? So I haven't checked for lambda larger than 1. For the moment, I've just looked at lambda equal to 1. But for lambda equal to 1, for 1, we're very close to the Knuth-Yau entropy bound. Yeah. The Knuth-Yau entropy bound is about 2 for lambda very small, yeah, and about 4 for lambda equal to 1. And by combining these two algorithms, we can have a cost that is about 7 throughout.
And so
on average,
if you use the Knuth-Yau algorithm that they have, you get within basically 4 bits,
yeah,
of the optimal for any lambda or for any distribution.
You mean with this algorithm?
No.
With
this tree that they have, which is called a DDG tree. And is this going to be better or?
No, it's not going to be better. But in the Knuth-Yau algorithm, what they say is that you have to have the binary decomposition of all the probabilities, and you have to calculate it explicitly. And that's costly, and that requires a lot of machinery.
Okay.
Whereas here, it's something that's very easy to implement in practice, and even on something like an assembly.
Great. Other question? Okay, so that's also one. What happens if you take lambda much larger than one? Will this still be useful?
So that's a little bit what Luke asked, and the question, the answer is I'm not sure yet. But if lambda is larger than one, of course you would just sum, you would sum a lot of Poisson variables of 1/2. That's what they also say in the Buffon paper. And since it's at 1/2 that both algorithms do very well, then I assume you would have something linear in 3 or 4, depending on lambda. But I'm not sure, by linear in 3 or 4, I mean you would have a cost that is like 4 lambda.
Yes, by subdividing, yeah. The sum of smaller, yes.
And I'm not sure exactly how that compares to the Knuth-Yahoo bounded. I would assume that it's not efficient at
But the entropy grows as log of lambda.
Yeah.
So if you sum, you have linear in lambda, so you may have a problem.
But once again, this is an algorithm that is efficient in practice, whereas Knuth and Yahoo, you have to keep track of the binary development of all them, which is not so easy, especially since there's factorial in it. I'm not sure I understand. You mean draw random trees? Oh, yes.
Example,
you mean draw random trees and then only accept certain trees?
Yeah. For example, the class of binary trees within unary binary trees would give you a log and would be fast for the same reason even without translating the trees. They are already there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is...
No, that is a good idea, and it would completely go into the scheme because... basically, the reason why we're using permutations is because it's, as I said, something that's easy to generate. But indeed, trees are something that it's easy to generate, and that we know the combinatorial enumeration. And the game and all these things is to find an object that we know how to generate that has a distribution that is something we're looking for. And so, indeed, it's a good idea. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, yes, thank you.
Hi, I was going to start this with a joke.